Remaker's Mark, Episode 29, Casablanca. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Remaker's Mark. Here we are in Episode 29, where we are discussing the classic Casablanca. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks. Andy, how are you tonight? And what is your favorite classy drink order?
I am very well, thank you. My favorite classy drink is not classy, but ginger ale. I like ginger ale.
Ooh, nice.
It's kind of my airplane drink. Do you guys have airplane drinks?
Yes, mine is Pepsi, and I never order Pepsi anywhere else.
mine's ginger ale.
Inexplicably Pepsi.
I never get it anywhere else but on an airplane.
Mine is wine.
Ah.
What airline serves Pepsi?
Lots. Okay. Pepsi Airlines, mostly.
Air Pepsi.
Air Pepsi, yes, indeed. Crystal Air.
Yeah,
gross. All right, moving on. Jeremy Nilsson, how are you tonight? And what is your favorite classy drink order?
I am very excited to be here. And my drink order, it would probably be the Fidel Castro.
Ooh, that's like a dark and stormy, yeah?
It's a rum-based drink with some ginger beer, some lime, several other things.
Yep. I make those here. They're really good.
Yep. They're fun to order too.
Yeah. Lee Casablanca, how are you tonight, and what is your favorite classy drink order?
I'm doing well, and one of my go-tos is a Manhattan.
Ooh, nice. Good choice.
Thank you.
Very boozy.
Mm-hmm. And delicious.
Yeah. And Mark Josing, how are you tonight, and what is your favorite classy drink order?
Hello, I am very well, thank you, and my favorite classy drink order, actually just one of my favorite drink orders, period, is the sidecar.
Oh, good call. That's a thank good one. You. I thought about that.
Yeah, I love me a sidecar.
Yep. That's brandy, right?
Yeah, brandy, triple sec, lemon juice, sometimes sugar on the rim.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very, very sweet and delicious.
Mm-hmm. Very period accurate to this film.
Yeah, indeed. Very good. My name is Kyle Delahunt. I will be your host once again this fine evening. And my favorite classy drink order is sort of a new one. It's called the Bourbon Renewal. It's a drink that came out. So there's a restaurant in downtown Minneapolis called Dan Kelly's. It used to be called Dan Kelly's Bar and Grill. Now it's Dan Kelly's Pub. Kate's brother, Maddie, just recently purchased it and reopened it. And it's great. And that's one of the drink additions there. And it's, let me think here, Bourbon Cassis and lemon kind of wrapped around the rim. Super duper duper tasty and dangerously drinkable. So yeah, really, really good. I'd highly recommend trying it. So the Bourbon Renewal. Plus it's a good name. Can't go wrong with a clever name.
Mm-hmm.
Well, before we move on to our discussion of Casablanca, we want to thank our friends at Modern Antics for their promotional consideration.
Modern Antics produces and markets hugely interesting events in bars and other cool places. Looking for an extra special Valentine's Day activity? Look no further than Sextravaganza, the Sex Pun Show, at Club Underground on Saturday, February 14th. 8 of the dirtiest Twin Cities comedians and pandemonium regulars will be given suggestive prompts and have 2 minutes to make the dirtiest puns, innuendos, and double entendres they can think of. Interested in other Modern Antics events? Check them out at modernantics.com or on Facebook and Twitter at Modern Antics.
All right. Thanks again to Modern Antics. Now, Andy is going to take us on a tour of the summary of the film and our history with it. Andy, take us away.
Come with me to a special time. Casablanca. Thanks, Mark. Casablanca is a 1942 drama directed by Michael Curtiz, who's also known for directing such little-known films as White Christmas and The Adventures of Robin Hood, among scores of other films. Casablanca is set in the city of the same name in French Morocco at the beginning of World War II, when European refugees are fleeing the Third Reich, often through the as-yet-unoccupied port city in North Africa. Rick Blaine is an American expatriate with a complicated past, and he runs Rick's Café Américain, or however you would say that, the most popular night spot in town. His comfortable existence is upended by the arrival of a former lover, and his staunch neutrality is put to the test. I was very excited when this movie was selected. Mark and I lived together way, way ago in the past, and we actually had kind of what ended up being a little bit of a movie date night with this film.
Mm-hmm. We cuddled.
We cuddled a little bit. Mark, I think this was your Did you own this movie? Where did we get this movie?
I have no idea how we actually got the movie to watch, but...
Okay, well, but I remember loving this movie and kind of surprising myself at how much I liked it and thinking going into this that it was just going to be chock full of cliches, and don't get me wrong, it is, but they didn't seem like cliches because this is kind of the origin of a lot of those cliches, and I guess they don't seem like cliches when they're the origins, but just everything about this was just spot on and just loved it. Mark, tell me your side of that date night story.
Well, we cuddled.
We've established that.
That's a good side.
Yeah. No, I wanted to do an episode about this film because it's just so classy. It's so film noir. But at the same time, it's not most of the things that we associate with film noir, like, you know, a heist. It's not that sort of thing. It's not a detective film. It just has that really great air about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, I also felt like the opportunities to put a different spin on it there are a lot of them, given that they're between the making of this film and now, there have been so many situations in which people have become, you know, political refugees from their country of origin. That is why I picked this film.
That's a good reason. Good reasons. Nice. All right, so that was the summary of the film and our history with it. Now we're going to move on, as usual, in part one, where we discuss how we would recast the film. So we have three major characters and five minor characters that we're going to discuss tonight. The first major character is that of Victor Laszlo. Mark, tell us about Laszlo.
Will do, Captain. The great Victor Laszlo is a Czech resistance leader who is strangely devoid of a Slavic accent, which is... probably why the German presence in Casablanca is so inexplicably, which is probably why the German presence in Casablanca is so inexplicably polite to him. He first appears accompanying Ilsa to Rick's cafe because plot points, and afterwards incurs further plot points.
As you do.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. That was my redacted intro to Victor Laszlo.
Nice.
Well, he was an underground leader, so I guess it's, you know,
yes,
it's germane to the subject.
Yes. Originally portrayed by Paul Henried, or perhaps Paul Henry.
Oui, oui.
I don't know how French it is, but...
None French.
it's much French. Such much French. Basically for all the dudes in this film, I wanted to go as film noir as possible, just looking for stately and mannered and elegant, and who could look really, really classy with a drink in one hand and a cigarette in the other. And for Victor Laszlo... I landed on Tom Hiddleston.
Oh, yeah.
Because, excellent.
Because all of those things in spades.
He does have all of those things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted, one of the things that I really wanted to do was sort of up the, you wanted there to be an uncertainty between whether she would pick Laszlo or Rick. And in the original, I wouldn't call that a contest necessarily. I don't know. Like, Rick isn't a beautiful man by any means, but like they certainly, you know, the movie is meant to go in Rick's favor mostly. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And maybe that's just revisionist history, knowing that, or just knowing Bogart and his sort of legacy. But like, Laszlo felt like a little bit of an afterthought in that. And I wanted it to be pretty even terms. So I think Hiddleston definitely would do that in spades.
Yeah, I agree. And I really wanted to get an imposing presence for Victor Laszlo to kind of even up the odds a little bit, as you say, Kyle, or as I interpreted what you said.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you got it.
Take a step backwards. We would know Tom Hiddleston as Loki from the recent Marvel films mostly. In this role, if he were to just replay his portrayal of F. Scott Fitzgerald from Midnight in Paris, I would be totally happy.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's a good compass point.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that is my pick for Laszlo, is Tom Hiddleston. And Kyle, why don't you do the next one?
Will do. So I wanted somebody that was, again, you know, had a little bit more fire to him, both in terms of political beliefs and in terms of just sort of passion. I wanted him to really fight for Ilsa, which I don't think that he really did in the original. He just was, again, sort of there. So the person that I went with has shown passion in just about everything that he's done to varying degrees in his movies. But the person is Ralph Fiennes. You will know him first from Schindler's List, probably. Probably most recently from The Grand Budapest Hotel. In between, he's done The English Patient, which is kind of a sort of a compass point for me on this, sort of in terms of the mood of what I'd want this to be. The English Patient is very similar to that. So a little bit more smoldering, a little bit sexier. I want to maintain some of that sort of old noirish tone, but I want it to smolder a little bit more. And I think he would go a long ways towards that. So Ralph Fiennes is who I went with. Andy, you had a hmm?
It was more of a throat clearing, really.
Ah,
But if there would be any umbrage in its slight, it would be age-based. But yeah, my own pick isn't much better, so I'll keep my trap shut.
Fair enough. Speaking of that, Andy, what is your pick?
I went with a young buck. No, I went with Guy Pearce for this role.
Nice.
Thank you. I like Guy Pearce in this role because I picture Victor Laszlo, I just blanked on his name, the character of having, he needs to be this ruggedly handsome, dangerous looking kind of a guy. And Guy Pearce just kind of naturally fits that mold for me. There's an air of mystery about him. He obviously lives this life of danger. But at the same time, I mean, dude's a hunk, and I want this character or this actor to be more of a hunk than Rick. There has to be that kind of, when you see how Ilsa has to kind of choose between these two, you can see the appeal of both of them. But I wanted Victor to be, you know, to make more sense as a choice, as the man who wins Ilsa, so to speak, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I wanted Guy Pearce for this role. So I took Guy Pearce for this role, and I have now Guy Pearce in this role.
In my garage.
In my. If you want to see Guy Pearce again. No, I've said too much. Lee, who did you choose for Victor Laszlo?
Well, I thought of somebody who needed to be very likable, but when comparing them to the character of Rick, you still want to root for Rick instead. There's nothing wrong with Victor Laszlo, but he's just sort of in the way. So I went with Nathan Fillion.
Oh, nice. I'm intrigued.
Nice.
And I think that, you know, he has that swagger and self-confidence that the character needs. But at the same time, you could see Ilsa being torn. You know, he certainly has his qualities, but she obviously loves Rick more. And this, I just see that Victor is always finishing second to Rick, at least in this story.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a good second place. Not that he's not worthy of first place, but I think he would play that role well.
He's not a bad guy. He's just in the way. That's just how I saw the character. But Jer, who did you have?
I, too, was also kind of imagining that Laszlo is not really the villain of the movie and it is just as likable, just as eligible as Rick, just in different ways. And wanted to keep that portrayal, but also wanted to keep somebody that's going to have a kind of a harder edge to them because they are a resistance fighter. And like you guys said, have seen the battle lines and whatnot, concentration camp. So I went with Clive Owen.
Ooh, I like that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, me too.
Clive Owen from such films as Children of Men.
Born Identity.
Sin City. What was the shooter one? I don't remember that one.
Shoot 'em up?
Shoot 'em up, yep. That was close. The shooter movie. anyway, a nice, edgy British actor can play a wide range of emotions, can be super likable and compassionate, but then also can get a little bit of a rugged chin, leading man kind of salvo to him as well. So Clive Owen, everyone. Clive Owen.
I like his bringing smoothness to it. I think that's a little bit of a theme for all these people. I think Nathan Fillion can be smooth, although he does sort of bumbling smooth better. And Guy Pearce isn't as traditionally smooth as maybe like the Hiddlestons and Clive Owens of the world, largely just because he's not British, I guess. But, you know, I think that you want to believe. Huh? He's, what did I say? He's Australian, isn't he?
He's New Zealander. He's a Kiwi.
He is. He's a Kiwi. All right. Fair enough. I just see him in so many American movies. My bad. Well, he's not English, so I'm not technically wrong. Ha! So, you know, again, I think we just want to go to bat a little bit for Victor. Victor, you're a good guy. We like you, I think. So
quietly. We like you quietly.
You're okay, I guess.
We like you with almost no protest sometimes. So, in the role of Victor Laszlo, originally played by Paul Henri, maybe? Mark went with Tom Hiddleston. I went with Ralph Fiennes. Andy went with Guy Pearce. Lee went with Nathan Fillion. And Jer went with Clive Owen. Up next is the role of Ilsa. Jer, tell us about Ilsa.
I shall. Ilsa Lund, or Lund, was originally played by the beautifully Swedish Ingrid Bergman. Ilsa is a dame torn between loves, the love of her husband, the love of her lost love, Rick, and the love of her cause. She, in the story, uses every tool that she can think of to get the letters of transit from Rick in order to escape and further the cause, including pleading, crying, and at one point gunning. And eventually she realizes through all that she does still love him just as much as he loves her. Which makes things way, way simpler, which is not, in fact, true. But nope. Things become complicated, plot points abound, and so on.
Richard, we loved each other once. If those days meant anything at all to me.
I wouldn't bring up Paris if I were you. It's poor salesmanship.
Please listen to me. If you knew what really happened, if you only knew the truth.
I wouldn't believe you no matter what you told me. You'd say anything now to get what you want.
You want to feel sorry for yourself, don't you? There's so much at stake, all you can think of is your own feeling. One woman has hurt you and you take your revenge on the rest of the world. You're a coward and weakling. No. No, Richard, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but you are our last hope. If you don't help us, Victor Laszlo will die in Casablanca.
What of it? I'm going to die in Casablanca. It's a good spot for it.
Ingrid Bergman was great. I love her, and not just because she's Swedish. But I chose, I actually went into French cinema a little bit to recast her, and I chose Ava Green. She is, we would know her from Casino Royale.
The Dreamers.
The Dreamers. She was in Dark Shadows, the movie, which I skipped. I think just the new 300 movie, not the original one.
Correct.
But she was also, one of the things that I saw her in that I really enjoyed is she played Morgan in the Camelot TV series.
Yes, and she was awesome.
And she was phenomenal in that. I loved that. So that's who I'm going with.
That's awesome.
She's just classically gorgeous and in the same way that Ingrid Bergman is, just very, very classy. And beautiful, and that, yeah.
Yeah. I just love that she is unabashedly female. Like, she does not have any qualms with choosing characters that do this, or herself, like, exposing herself sometimes emotionally, sometimes quite literally, on screen. And I just love that she just, like, you know, knows what wiles women can have. And sometimes that can be done very generically or stereotypically, but sometimes it can be done very effectively. And she always, no matter if how it's written, she goes to the effective end of it just because of her performances and how much she puts into it.
Totally. It's always effective with her.
Yeah. She's just awesome. 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 I love her. Good choice.
I have to wonder if she would bring like her trademark edge to this performance, mm-hmm. or if she could be as vulnerable as Ingrid Bergman was, and would that be strange to see?
I think she can get there. I think it would certainly have more edge just by virtue of her being her, but I think she could get there.
I think that it would definitely be a little bit less of Laszlo versus Rick and her sort of being a cog between the two of them, and her being her own person, choosing her own fate in this a little bit more, having a little bit more stake in it, as opposed to just, which guy should I choose? which is good, and I think that would round out that already good character quite a bit more.
Yeah, very well put.
Mm-hmm.
But that's me, Ava Green, and I pass it upon to Lee.
Thank you. I think there are very few actresses that can carry themselves with the level of elegance that Ingrid Bergman did. But keeping that in mind, I wanted someone who at least came close. So I went with Keira Knightley. I think she has the right kind of mannerisms and that, you know, that very willowy way of moving. That is very much, you know, what the character is. And I really like her for this role, and I, you know, she's done a lot of romantic leads, and she does them very well. So that is my choice for this character.
I wasn't a huge Keira Knightley fan until I just saw this last weekend. I saw The Imitation Game, and that was the first role in her that I've seen her in that I was like, I really see her as an actress now, instead of being this waifish model turned actor kind of a thing that seemed to be her shtick for a little bit. Like, I liked the fact that she was cast in kind of the anti-sex pot role.
Yeah.
I mean, she's cast as a code-breaking nerd, you know, and did it wonderfully, I thought. So,
yeah, she's quite good in that.
Yeah. So that really kind of turned my opinion on her around. So I like her a lot for that one.
I really liked her in Atonement.
Haven't seen
it. Yes. I thought she was amazing.
Oh, it's fantastic.
In that. Yeah.
Everything about that film is marvelous.
Yes. I still haven't seen that one. I need to do so.
It's very good.
Nice. My only concern with her is that she is so baby-faced. You know, she just comes off as so young. And not like Ingrid Bergman came off terribly old, but that would be my only struggle, would be seeing her as sort of someone that's been through what she's been through a little bit. But I do think she's a good actress. I think she could pull it off, but it's just my reaction to her as an actress.
I thought about that too, but I still think that, you know, her elegance would transcend that. So I think it wouldn't be a problem for her.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
But moving on to Mark.
Okie dokie. Well, for my pick for Ilsa, like Jer, I went to French cinema. But unlike Jer, I picked Marion Cotillard.
Ooh. Ooh, good one.
Thank you. Yeah, my first criterion for this role was grace. You know, just go right for maximum grace and elegance, and then acting ability second. Not that.
Well, you're honest.
Yeah, but you know, Marion Cotillard is a good actor, and well, hey, I mean, she got the Oscar to prove it, and I think that she can do a lot of things subtly and still be just as graceful and just sit as pretty as she always does. In Big Fish, she was just so pleasant. And in Inception, she was so unhinged, and I loved it. Mm-hmm. The Dark Knight Rises, she was, well, everything that Talia al Ghul needed to be. Spoilers. That's my pick for Ilsa, is Marion Cotillard, because the looking up into the soft light would be perfect.
Yeah,
that's true.
She gives good face, for sure.
She would not. She would.
Thanks, Madonna.
Thank you. Well, come on, it's legit. I think it's a legit phrase.
Sounds so
what
if dirty.
Madonna
gives
it?
Good face.
No, it's not.
Sounds
dirty.
So dirty.
Come on. Okay, maybe it's a little bit dirty, but
I forgot that she was Canadian anchor in Anchorman 2.
Oh, that actress. Okay.
Yeah. Now I know she is.
She's always bothered me, but I don't know why. Like, I haven't loved her in anything, but I haven't, like, disliked her. And I know she's a good actress. I think I just have, like, I have a block with her or something. But, maybe this would be the one to turn me.
Yeah, I didn't like her in Dark Knight, but I think that was more to do with the stupid reveal than anything else.
Yeah, that was okay.
But I did really like her in Public Enemies and Big Fish. She was great.
Mm-hmm.
Albeit minor, but played it very well.
Yeah, I agrees. So that's my pick, Marianne Cotillard. Kyle, on to you.
Yeah, so again, kind of going back to my theme of a little bit more smoldering, a little bit more passionate, someone that you wanted to really feel that pull, really feel that tension. And when I think of all those things put together, I think of the great Kate Winslet.
I thought she might pop up.
Yeah, she is just a tremendous actress. She hasn't done a lot of late, I don't think, which is too bad because I think she's about as good an actress as we have in the biz. So I just think she would, you know, do the soft focus look really well. I think she could show sort of that tension between whether to go for Victor or Rick really well. I just think she would be perfect for it. So Kate Winslet is my lady.
It's a good pick.
I do like that one.
Thank you.
Speaking of face giving, yeah.
Fair. Let's just decide that it's okay, and we're all fine with it.
No, she is quite elegant. I like that.
Yep. But there's always a fire behind it too. You know, even when there's elegance, you just know that there's like a spirit that she has that can sometimes, it doesn't betray that, but it just underlies it, which I think is great. Last but not least, Andy, tell us about your pick for Ilsa.
My pick for Ilsa is the best pick for Ilsa, just because I think so. I chose Jennifer Connelly for this one.
Ooh, I love her.
I'm intrigued. I thought you would like her, Kyle. I can't really give a specific reason or performance as to why she just kind of jumped out at me for this one. But I like for this character, I would picture a reboot being, I just think you would have to dial down the noir a little bit because I don't feel like you could do it today without it feeling like a gimmick. And we can talk about that in the second half. But I would want this to have a little more tension in the movie, a little more of the political circumstances and goings on.
Yes.
And I think that she could play that role. She could have the grace, pardon me, the grace of this role combined with a little bit of the anxiety and stress that kind of is the undercurrent throughout. Plus, I think she's just gorgeous. And I think, I'm not going to say it, I think she would look very pretty. I'm not going to say that other thing.
Fair enough.
That Kyle has deemed to be okay, but I still think is not. And with the rest of my ensemble for this pick, I feel like she would fit in age-wise and otherwise. So Jennifer Connelly.
Nice. All right. It's interesting. I wouldn't say this movie is a parallel to Casablanca or was influenced by necessarily, but thinking of like how to modernize a noirish story. She was in Dark City, which had a lot of that. Now, again, very different from Casablanca, but like the way that she brought that energy to that role in a kind of a modern noir style movie, I think is a really good, really good comparison for that.
I do actually have, as I'm looking at her IMDb page, a performance does jump out at me, and it's her performance in A Beautiful Mind that I was very, very impressed with. And I'll draw on specifically, there's kind of a take charge aspect of her character in that movie, at least in a few scenes that come to mind that I would want for this role. I would feel like Ilsa maybe at first wasn't this kind of take charge kind of girl. She was more maybe swept up in the charismatic presence of Victor Laszlo and then of Rick. But then when both of those things kind of get swept away from her, she has to kind of, you know, put on her big girl panties and take care of business to make sure that, you know, both of the men that she loves, that she can kind of reunite and do everything that she needs to do to kind of further the cause. So a little steel in her spine that I'm going to reference from A Beautiful Mind.
Good one.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for the role of Ilsa Lund, originally played by Ingrid Bergman, Jer went with Ava Green. Lee went with Keira Knightley. Mark went with Marianne Cotillard. I went with Kate Winslet. And Andy went with Jennifer Connelly. And then the last of our major roles, that of Rick. Andy, tell us about Rick.
Rick Blaine is a complicated man under that cynical facade. He has been hurt in love, and he doesn't like to discuss it. Unless he's super drunk, and then he won't shut up about it. He is devoutly neutral in a world that is being cleaved in twain because, hey, everybody needs to buy their drink somewhere.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world, she walks into mine. What's that you're playing?
Oh, just a little something of my own.
Oh, stop it. You know what I want to hear.
No, I don't.
You played it for her, you played it for me.
Well, I don't think I can remember.
If she can stand it, I can. Play it.
Yes, boss.
So I went a little off the rails on this one. This is not the first time that I have selected a non-actor for
Shia LaBeouf.
Ouch.
Oh man. I walked into that one, and I will take that. I will own that. Not who I was referencing. But anyway, when I watched this movie recently, it shocked me how quickly in my mind I was decided on this person to play Rick Blaine. And I can't, there is no acting reference that I can give you, because he is on TV, he is not an actor. But there is a presence, a look, a persona to this person that I see in this character of Rick Blaine. Drumroll, please. That person is Anthony Bourdain.
Oh, wow.
So I was close. I was so close.
Now, who are you thinking, Jerry? I want to know.
I was thinking of one of the three principal character or actors from, not actors, one of the three hosts of the BBC's Top Gear.
Oh. Or MasterChef.
Interesting.
Or
MasterChef. Okay.
I'll point out that he does have actual acting credits.
Oh, even better. Great. So my pick is legitimized.
Yeah, he was in an awesome episode of Archer, I believe.
Oh, yeah, he was. Oh, that's nice. But he played himself, didn't he? Or a spoof of
Pretty
himself?
Pretty much. Yeah.
But I remember that episode. It was a good one. So Anthony Bourdain, if you don't know, is a celebrity chef, hosts a show on CNN called Parts Unknown. I highly recommend it if you haven't seen it. It also appears on a couple, like the Taste or the Mouthful or some stupid little cooking show. It's dumb. But every time I watch him on that show, he's always just like, God damn, contractual obligation. But for Parts Unknown, it's a travelogue show that spends a fair chunk of each episode on kind of the political goings on of wherever he is, and a good chunk of the show on the food of wherever he is. And it's magical. But,
it is, yes.
Mm-hmm. He has this kind of presence about him that I just, for some reason, translates right to Rick Blaine for me. It's a look in his face that's this kind of jaded, kind of doesn't really care, a little bit tired, you know, kind of a look. And so I figure you clean up Anthony Bourdain a little bit, you shine him up, you put him in a nice suit, give him a few acting lessons, you know, put a drink in his hand. That's nothing new to him. Then there you go. Let the rest of the actors take care of it.
Yeah. I don't know if it would work, but I really want to see it try.
I know. I just
so good.
So Anthony Bourdain.
I think the right director would make magic.
I think so too.
That's an inspired pick.
Thank you.
I like it a lot. Agreed.
My wife thinks it's the worst pick ever in the history of ever. But I'm
Umbridge, Anna. Umbridge.
Yeah.
So with that, I pass the conch to Jer.
Ooh, nice.
Well done.
That's a big shell. A
fine conch impression you got there,
Thank
son.
You. Thank you. Andy and I were practicing that little moment of timing earlier.
For days.
So I, unlike Andy, struggled with this pick and could not find somebody right away. And also, unlike Andy, went completely the other direction to an actor that's probably a little too well known and A-listed. So I went with Robert Downey Jr. Most specifically, I would reference his, a couple different movies, but the recent one, probably from 5 years ago or so, The Soloist. I thought that there was a lot of the same emotions in that character that he would bring to this role. I think when he's not trying to be charming, I think it really works for Robert Downey Jr. I think that he can really pull off a wide range when he's not trying to be Tony Stark or Sherlock Holmes, let's just say.
Okay.
So that's where I went. I think that he's got a lot of leading man cred. I think he can be charming without being smarmy. And I think that he also brings the sort of, I don't want to get involved kind of attitude, that he's just here to run a bar and he doesn't want to pick sides or make any big heroic decisions or affect the war in either way. He just wants to live his life quietly and enjoy running a bar in Northern Africa.
Nice. My only criticism with Robert Downey Jr. is that I feel like he's at his best when he is speaking freely and quickly and seemingly off the cuff, which are three ways that I would not describe Rick Blaine. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like he's very tightly wound. He's very controlled. So it would have to be either a different Robert Downey Jr. or a very different Rick. Now, I don't think that either of those are impossible to find, but I'm just having a hard time seeing that given sort of what he's brought the last few years, especially.
I don't know if I agree with that, Kyle.
Yeah.
I think you dig in and, you know, pay way too much attention to the film. Rick does all that really quippy, quick delivery stuff that you might expect out of Robert Downey Jr. But for me, I don't know if I want Robert Downey Jr. to be the one delivering it. It's too sarcastic.
Yeah, and, maybe that's a little bit too.
Not flat enough. So
yeah,
yep. But the same sort of pacing really, really works for me.
Yeah.
A Robert Downey Jr. portrayal would just be Rick Blaine on speed to me, you know?
And that's why I would reference movies like The Soloist,
which I haven't seen.
All of that is tempered down a lot, okay. And there's a lot more undercurrent, and I don't know if passion's quite the right word, but there is a lot more seriousness to the character while still being very Robert Downey Jr.-y. It's not so quippy or sarcastic, maybe.
Gotcha. Yeah, I haven't seen that either, so I need to do so.
Me too.
The Judge 2 would be another one, although I haven't seen it, but I would imagine that it's from what I've seen from clips and things for awards and whatnot, it seems like it's another similar performance.
Yeah.
And I suppose you're waiting for me to choose someone else, and that someone
choose
else
wisely.
Would be, I choose Pika Kyle.
Oh, good Pokemon reference. I get those.
So, Kyle, you can only say your name for the next paragraph.
I also would have accepted Squirt Kyle instead of Squirtle.
It's
my favorite Pokemon. Come on. I also live in a world where I have a favorite Pokemon, so I just want to point that out.
I was just going to say.
Yes.
Yeah, I do too. So
I don't want to have to go to Urban Dictionary one more time tonight, okay?
Just look up Squirtle. And
no, I won't.
It'll be just fine. No, it's fine. Just Squirt with an L-E at the end. It's adorable.
Squirtle. It is adorable.
It is adorable. Thank you, Mark. So for my pick, it is not anything to do with Squirtle or Pokemon. Although, no, there's not. I went with Hugh Jackman for this role. I think he can bring the energy. I think he can bring appropriate and channeled forms of sass to the role necessary. I just think he would do very well, and I could see him in that setting, whether it be very noir-y or a little bit more updated. I think he could cover all bases of it. So our friend Hugh.
Nice. I think if Joe Hollywood was actually making this movie, then he would be near the top of the casting lists.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, I tried to go, like, you know, one tier off. Like, I didn't want to go straight Clooney. You know, I think Clooney is kind of the safe bet. I wanted to go, like, one tier over, but still very accessible and very, you know, sometimes it's just a good choice because it's a good choice. And I think that's what this one would fall under.
He was definitely on my list as well.
Cool.
Especially after Les Mis, and you saw kind of that more classy, deeper side of him.
Totally.
Baritone, if you will.
Yes, quite. All right, Mark, on to you. Who did you pick for Rick?
My pick for Rick, my Rick pick, is nice. Zachary Levi. And?
Oh.
Yes. And at this point, you'll all be saying, oh, that guy.
Oh, yeah.
Zachary Levi is is probably best known for playing Chuck in the TV series of the same name.
Nice.
But he's a very active Hollywood guy and was nigh unrecognizable in Thor the Dark World because he was Fandral the Dashing and sporting all sorts of facial hair and blonde curls that he doesn't usually. And he was nigh unrecognizable.
Who is he in Thor? Who's Fandral?
Fandral the Dashing is one of the Warriors Three.
He's one of Thor's buddies.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
Robin Hood.
Wow.
Yeah, he's the Robin Hood guy.
You know, the Dashing.
Wow.
He wasn't Fandral in the first Thor movie, only in the second one. I think there were scheduling problems or something. He was supposed to be in the first one, but it just didn't work. So he got understudied. Also, he was unrecognizable in the movie Tangled because that was animated.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But he also runs this organization called Nerd HQ, which basically goes to comic cons and brings big stars to sit down and talk to normal nerds. Yeah, so he's actually like a pretty big Hollywood player. And I think he would look all sorts of great in that suit and bow tie.
Nice. He seems a little young, but he's very dashing. I'll give him that.
Indeed, he is Seyfandril level dashing.
Mm-hmm. He's younger than me, and I just know I'm no Rick, for many reasons, mind you. I'm not that handsome. I'm not that, bar oni. So,
yeah, I was surprised at how young he is, because he is also younger than I am, and I feel like his career is much older than that. He's been around a long time. I mean, Chuck was 2007, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, by gum, he was just a young pup when doing that, apparently.
Yeah.
He brought star quality to it. So I present to you my pick, Zachary Levi.
Nice. I like it.
Thank you. So let's move on to Lee.
Well, Rick Blaine is... I kept on thinking, you know, how emotionally closed off and how, you know, what a tough outer shell he has in terms of getting to know people and letting them into his life, kind of keeps him at a distance. And yet, you know, when he does open up, he's really the guy that you root for. So I chose John Hamm.
Oh.
Also on my list.
Yeah. Because I thought he had all those qualities, and he's a successor to Bogart, in my opinion.
Yeah, totally.
Yep. Yeah, he was on that. Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, I'll say I love that he has that Uber Bogart feel where he looks super smooth but feels just a little bit rough.
Yeah.
And yep. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got a lived-in personality. that's maybe a strange phrase, but I'm gonna roll with it anyway, because it's on tape.
It's on tape. It's permanent record now.
Also, like Anthony Bourdain, guest starred on Archer.
Yeah, true.
Wow.
That does lend some credence to the pick.
Exactly.
Yep. Wait a minute.
Actually, all right, I think Zachary Levi did too.
What?
I'm gonna have to confirm that one.
Hmm.
Everyone's been on that show. But that's my pick for the main character, John Hamm.
I like it. All right, so for the role of Rick Blaine, originally played by Humphrey Bogart, Andy chose Anthony Bourdain, Jer chose Robert Downey Jr., I chose Hugh Jackman, Mark chose Zachary Levi, and Lee chose John Hamm. Now we move on to the minor characters, the first of which is Carl. Jer, tell us about Carl.
Carl is Rick's rotund bartender and friend. He's a jovial type and brings a small amount of comic relief to the movie. Such much.
Yes, such much comic relief.
Such much comic relief. I had the perfect pick for this one and then realized he was dead.
hasn't stopped us before.
CGI him.
Dang it, that's true. Can I switch it?
No, because your other pick is perfect.
Yeah, I'm gonna stick with my pick that I picked, the pick of picked. And I went with John Rhys Davies.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. Yep.
That is a good one.
The only hard part is I just hear Sala in Carl, and I don't need to, and I don't want to. And I hear a little bit of Tree Bird, so this would have to be a separate thing, but it's
Tree
perfect.
Beard.
Sorry, Tree Beard.
Tree Bird.
I'm as tree as a bird now.
Wait, how many
for anybody
birds?
That doesn't know the John Rhys Davies library, he was Sala, Indiana Jones's right-hand man, in two of the four Indiana Jones movies. He was also Gimli the Dwarf and Treebeard in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, mm-hmm. and has done many, many other things, and he's a great character actor. And he would play a little different Carl, but I think a great comic relief Carl.
The scene they say like, oh, Carl, you should have a seat. And then he just like pulls his own little glass out and sits down with him and pours himself a drink. Like that would, John Rhys Davies would be perfect for that.
Because it was in his jacket.
Yeah.
His little snifter.
Yep. Like he just comes with his own beverage. Like, oh, okay. Don't mind if I do. Yeah. That's awesome. Good pick.
That's the watch scene too. I love that scene.
Mm-hmm.
So that's me. That's Carl. I could play Carl. But not as good as John Rhys Davies.
No.
Moving on, we have Major Heinrich Strasser and Lee.
Yes, Herr Strasser is our main villain who is on a quest to both find who murdered the German couriers and prevent Laszlo from escaping. Like a typical Nazi, he cares little about who gets hurt as long as he achieves his objective and will stop at nothing to complete his mission. Not a particularly dimensional character. He's just a bad guy. So my pick is very much on the nose, probably the most on the nose pick I've ever had. I went with August Diehl, who is, I believe, a German actor, who I only know from Inglourious Basterds. He played Major something.
Hellstrom.
That's it. And he's in a great scene in that movie, playing sort of a battle of wits with Michael Fassbender's character.
He's the one that calls him on the German accent, right?
Yep.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, the okay. German counting, wasn't it? It was the German counting scene.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Yep. But okay. he's very good in that. He's very cold and calculating, and that scene, it just seems like an innocuous card game, but you know, he's the whole time he's testing Fassbender's accent to see if he slips up, which he eventually does. But yeah, August Diehl is my pick for Heinrich Strasser.
Nice. It would definitely be terrifying.
Yeah, he was very, very classic Nazi in that movie.
Yeah, very intimidating.
He reminds me of like the German Michael Pitt. Like those two could be like brothers in a movie very easily, from Boardwalk Empire and the Kurt Cobain, Gus Van Sant movie. I'm trying to think what else. Yeah.
Yeah. But moving on to Mark for Signor Ferrari.
Yes. Signor Ferrari is the owner of the Blue Parrot, a competitor to Rick's Cafe. While he is basically a good person, he is also basically a greedy criminal, involving himself in black market dealings and repeatedly attempting to buy out Rick and his assets.
Sounds like a board game.
Doesn't it, though?
It does.
I would love that game. although it might just basically be, you know, Monopoly in Morocco.
Yeah.
Well, to the casting of the actor, I also went to the well of Inglourious Basterds, and riding up in my bucket was Christoph Waltz.
Nice.
That's a great intro.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
he might be on the Hall of Fame ballots here soon. We picked him an awful lot.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Two weeks in a row.
Yeah, yeah,
and we've had two episodes in a row.
Yep. I feel like he's sort of taken over the Sam Rockwell role in our broadly ranged actors pool.
Yeah. He's so good, though.
He is so good. It's true. It's for a good reason.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, and I picked him because for this role, I wanted to get that exact right combination of skis and humor.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be just off enough to be both weird and funny. And that is exactly Christoph Waltz.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
I wasn't a huge fan of Django Unchained, but I thought his role in that was a lot of fun. And I think a good place to point at for this.
Yes. I felt exactly the same way. I didn't love the movie, but I loved Christoph Waltz in it.
Yeah.
So that's my pick for Signor Ferrari, Christoph Waltz.
Good one.
Let's move on to Kyle.
Yeah, so I have Sam. Sam is first and foremost a piano player and singer, and he does a fantastic job of both of those things. But that's not all that he brings to the story. He's both friend and confidant to Rick, and one of the only people that he truly trusts. Also, he might be the only fully and truly good character in the movie. I had a hard time with this one. I wanted to pick a musician, because to me, it's more important that if there's someone singing and playing, that they look like they're singing and playing. I think we've talked about this a little bit before, but it drives me nuts as a musician when I can see that people are just faking it on guitar. They either have to be 100% obviously totally faking it or playing it perfectly. Like anything in between is just the worst kind of uncanny valley for me. So I wanted somebody who was a musician. And then I didn't know quite where to go with it, like whether to go kind of like an aged jazz musician, someone a little bit younger. But I'm pretty proud of the person that I landed on. And it's not someone that even 6 months ago I would have expected to say. The person that I chose for this role is D'Angelo. He was a neo-soul singer from the early 2000s, who put out two amazing, amazing albums and then just sort of fell off the face of the earth. Nobody quite knew what happened to him, sort of like, you know, Sly Stone sort of style, where lots of legends, but nobody really knew what was going on. And then he started playing a few more shows. He played a First Ave here pretty recently, but it was kind of one of those, like, is he going to be okay sort of things? But then he put out a record called Black Messiah pretty recently, which is extraordinary. So I thought, hey, why not take advantage of that and see if he'd be willing to play Sam? I think it would be a good fit. He's a hell of a piano player and an even better singer. So even if he's just singing kind of traditional songs, I think he would do it beautifully. So D'Angelo.
Nice. Thanks. Good pick.
So Kyle, would you say that Dooley Wilson was of the 100% not even trying to play camp?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
He just sort of put his hands on the keys.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever really pushed down.
Kind of the ragdoll hands.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Yep. But it seemed, I don't know if he was singing or not, but the singing felt,
I think he was singing. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Just,
yep.
The singing did feel better.
Yes. Agreed. Yeah.
But the, he kind of played the piano the same way that, that my 2-year-old daughter does.
That's a good way to do it.
It was a little Muppety.
And he also apparently can never look at the piano while playing.
That's the Fats Domino school of playing, him always looking to the side. Mm-hmm. If you ever see a video of him playing, it's always the same thing. So that was my Sam. Now, last but not least, Andy, tell us about the good French captain.
Captain Louis Renault is a little bit comic relief, a little bit local authority, a lot of bit opportunist, and in the end, still an opportunist. Originally played by Claude Rains, he is kind of a friend of Rick's. It's not really clear. Clearly a good customer of Rick's, but also very much willing to be in the employ of the Nazis. Kind of whoever, he kind of goes which way the wind blows. But I think he does provide some good comic relief and also plot points. So for this one, I chose Mike Myers.
Another Inglorious Bastard.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that pick. Funny.
Thank you.
I think it could be a great comeback for him.
Mm-hmm. That it would be a role. I think he's of an age where he could easily be seen in this authority role, but obviously Mike Myers has the comedic chops to make this a little bit funny. But I don't want this to be over the top funny. I wanted to just have the glimpses of humor that the original portrayal did. There's a scene. It's so brief, but I love it when he's actually clearing out the cafe and like saying something like, "There's been, you know, gambling discovered here." And
I love that one.
And then someone runs up and real quick and says, "Captain, here are your winnings." And he kind of quickly shoves them in his pocket. And so, yeah. You know, stuff like that is just really, really funny. But clearly he's a guy that just, you know, he looks out for himself first and foremost. And I think that Mike Myers could play that very well.
Yeah. Basically, the one sentence encapsulation of that character is, "What if I were to shake your hand thusly?" Just exactly. So expect him to say that all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Nice. Good one. I like that.
Thank you.
I would have a hard time not seeing Mike Myers playing it as a character, which is
basically
what he'd have to do, because he's not a French policeman.
No, but and I agree. And
it would be a French.
I think he can do it. I think I would point you towards like Studio 54 or Inglourious Basterds and things like that, where things are a little bit out of left field for him, where he can be. He can play a character, but he's not playing one of his characters, if that makes sense.
It's not going to be welcome to all things French. If it's not French, it's crap.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. I feel like the not being like the Mike Myers showcase, that's just gives him the freedom to put a little bit of that character in, and it's we read it as good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Inglourious Basterds was almost too character-y.
Almost.
In fact, I think it was too character-y, but I forgave it, sort of, because I was so happy to see his face. But yeah, I don't know. It was very, very hard to see.
He's like Musk.
Yeah, it was for me, in Inglourious Basterds, it was, what is he doing here?
Yeah. Mike Myers is like mustard. A little bit goes a long way.
That's true. Yeah, well put.
Wow.
Very true. But I like Mike Myers. I don't like mustard. Just to clarify. All right. So that wraps up our major and minor casting. And with that, the first half of our discussion of Casablanca. If you would like to find out more information about this podcast or any other podcast or blog on the Math is Hard Network, check us out at mathishard.net. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook at username mathishardnet. Our next episode will be released on March 2nd when we'll be discussing the plot and filmmaking changes and appreciation we would make and have in our remake of Casablanca. So, gentlemen, until the next time that we hang out in Rick's American Bar, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.